Hey, true believers, welcome to episode 0 of Dave's Daredevil Podcast. I am J. David Weider. As always, you can call me Dave. And yes, this is a special one-off episode. I know the show is over. Episode 36 was the last one on the feed, so this is probably a surprise for you. And why an episode 0? Well, this is dropping on the last Sunday of October, which would have been where episode 52 would have been. That would have been 1 year of Dave's Daredevil Podcast. Unfortunately, the show ended. More on that in just a moment. But ultimately, the main plan was to build towards October's episode 50. And the plan for that was to assemble a group of guests who would bring their 5 favorite Daredevil stories, and we would discuss them. Pretty simple. There are a few other plans in the works, but since the show ended, that really never came together, except for one thing. One of the first guests I reached out to was W. Blaine Dowler. And Blaine came back very, very quickly, having recorded his segment. And the segment is excellent. So that's what you're going to be hearing in this particular episode, is Blaine talking about his top 5 favorite Daredevil stories. And since Blaine was courteous enough to make it and make it great, I refuse to waste good audio. But I know what you're thinking and what the question is on your mind. Does this mean what I think it means, Dave? Is the show coming back? Is Dave's Daredevil podcast going to continue? Are you coming out of retirement? And the answer is yes. I am coming back. Dave's Daredevil podcast will return with new episodes weekly every Sunday on January 4th of 2015. Why the 2-month hiatus? Well, the fact is, I move a little bit slower now. My schedule's a little bit tighter. So I want to make sure there are quite a few episodes in the can before anything goes live. I've been secretly working behind the scenes, making new episodes that I think you're really, really going to enjoy. I know I did. So the official news is Dave's Daredevil podcast returns January 4th of 2015. Jumping back right about where we picked off, there will be some changes. I'm going to discuss that when we come back with episode 37 in January. So spread the word, make sure everybody is resubscribed, because the show will be going forward. I'm very happy to announce that. More on that in just about 2 months. For now, enjoy Dave's Daredevil Podcast episode 0, in which Blaine Dowler celebrates 50 years of Daredevil by sharing his 5 favorite Daredevil stories.
Welcome to Dave's Daredevil Podcast. I'm still not Dave. This is Blaine Dowler again. Dave has invited several podcasters, including myself, to discuss our Daredevil origins and to cover 5 issues of Daredevil from wide and varied places in Daredevil's history, with very minimal restrictions. In fact, the only restriction he put on us is, don't pick these issues that I'll be doing next. One of the reasons he's asked me on, I think, is largely because I volunteered to fill in for him early on. I've been listening to the podcast for a while because I am a huge Daredevil fan myself, and I was considering doing my own Daredevil podcast when I searched through iTunes to see what was out there and ran across the announcement of Dave's before that actually went live. So when it comes to discussing my Daredevil origins and the 5 issues I've chosen, they're tied a little bit together. My entire life, I've been a fan of both superheroes and detectives. Unlike Dave, when the voices in my head tell me to watch Matlock, I give in and watch Matlock. And it's been that way right from the start. I also have a history of trying things out for the first time by randomly selecting the least representative example of an ongoing product. I never try to find the least representative example. It's just something I have a habit of doing. For example, growing up, a bunch of my classmates told me Roseanne was a great show and I should watch it. And it was hysterically funny. I tried watching it 3 times. All 3 times, randomly turning on the TV in time to watch the Serious Tornado episode. Yes, I've seen 1 episode of Roseanne, and I've seen it 3 times, and it's one where they weren't even trying to be funny. I tried to check out Superman comics, because I heard a lot of great things about that. I enjoyed the Richard Donner movies. and I picked up a Just Before Crisis Break from the Ordinary story where a boy implants his mind in Superman's body and gets to basically live as Superman for a day. Minimal supporting cast, no real villains, he's saving sinking ships and doing a lot of otherwise mundane stuff. Again, not really representative of Superman comics, as I know now that I've read a bunch more, and it turned me off. I tried reading Batman, and that was one of the ones I was most excited about, because I kept hearing this world's greatest detective thing, and, as I said, I'm a huge fan of detective stories. So I tried reading Batman, and the issue I picked up was in the middle of a storyline, featured a bunch of demons that were sent from hell, and little to no detective work. So I mentioned that to classmates of mine, because that had basically turned me off Batman for a while. Again, I have since gone back and read some much more representative stuff, including, say, Frank Miller. These classmates suggested that I try Daredevil instead. The next time I went comic shopping, I picked up Daredevil issue 278. Now, this issue was cover dated March 1990, and was released on or about January 2nd, 1990. In this period, we no longer had Jim Shooter's every comic is someone's first, so put a quick origin recap box on the first page thing going on. So, in my craving to find a superhero detective, picking up the story after not enjoying the Batman story I read, I grabbed an issue of Daredevil that's in the middle of a storyline featuring a demon sent from hell with little to no detective work. What can I say? I have a knack for finding the unusual issue. So this one's titled The Deadly Seven, written by Ann Nesenti, penciled by John Romita Jr., inked by Al Williamson, lettered by Joe Rosen, colors by Christy Scheel under the name Max Scheel, editor Ralph Macchio, not the Karate Kid, the other one, and at the time, editor-in-chief was Tom DeFalco. Now, there are things that I love about this. This was my first exposure to the Inhumans, through Gorgon and Karnak, who guest star in this issue. I liked in the art that they gave Dee Dee stubble, so I had no idea what happened in any previous issues. This was the first issue of Daredevil I'd ever read. But that told me a big chunk of what I needed to know about where they were in this point in the story. Daredevil and presumably the others he's been hanging out with are on the move and have been for a while, so he hasn't had time to shave. In fact, there's actually six people moving. There's number nine, who's a genetically altered woman, two normal people, one of whom is the daughter of the guy whose lab created number nine, the two Inhumans I mentioned, and Daredevil. And the initial conversation between them is interspersed with scenes of Mephisto teaching his son Blackheart about taking a good man and putting him on the path to evil. Now, reading this, I had no idea Daredevil was blind until it came out in the dialogue several pages in. It took me by complete surprise. So did his radar sense when he had it. So there was that interest there in what were his powers? How do his powers work? Because that wasn't terribly clear here. We could tell his hearing was good. I didn't know how good yet. I didn't really know about his super senses. I just knew he was blind and had some kind of radar. That's all that comes through on the page. In this story, Blackheart takes human form and goads Karnak into a jealous rage that's focused on Gorgon. And there's a great showcase for Karnak and Gorgon here, while Daredevil is lured off by Blackheart. So Daredevil doesn't represent himself well here, sadly, although the battle between Karnak and Gorgon is great. Gorgon kicks Karnak across a clearing into a huge tree, and Karnak is barely phased. And then the skinny little Karnak karate chops a tree thicker than his arm with no effort or even looking at the thing, and it falls right onto Gorgon. Gorgon just kicks it and shatters it before he gets hit by it. This is a knockdown, drag-out brawl. It's the kind of superhero action I liked. I was looking for detective stuff when I bought it. Didn't get that, but at least I got some good superhero action. Takes a little time for the story to get back to Daredevil. And, you know, even when it gets back to him, he doesn't represent himself well. Blackheart turns into the demon. Daredevil beats on the demon, and then Blackheart turns back into the human form while he's beaten, without fighting back, just as people come in. And, you know, throws Daredevil for a loop. He knows he's dealing with something purely evil. He doesn't understand what it is. He doesn't really recognize the threat, and he just realizes he can't beat this thing here. So we do see Daredevil fight a bit, but he doesn't actually seem to be injuring the thing he's fighting. It's more like it chose to take the look of a beaten old man just to screw with Daredevil. So as a teenager, the thing that I latched onto in this issue wasn't Daredevil himself. It was the Inhumans. And I followed the Inhumans into X-Factor, which was being edited by Ann Nesenti at the time, and this was before Peter David took over as a writer. And following them there was just in time to start the story arc where Apocalypse returns, fights for control of the ship, Cyclops ends up giving up Cable before he even had confirmation that his son was Cable. Although if you check out those issues of X-Factor, I believe the numbers were 65 through 68, all the clues you need to put that together are there. And in fact, as a 12-year-old, I did figure that out. I got excited. I told my classmates. I figured out who Cable was, why he was showing up looking for Cyclops. When I was proven true, I felt great. And it really helped me latch onto the X corner of the universe, which is what I read for the next 2 or 3 years at the time. But I really didn't realize what I'd actually stumbled upon. So as I discussed when I had filled in for Dave earlier, so we could spend the necessary time editing this monstrous 50th anniversary special, Gary Friedrich had an idea for a Daredevil villain almost 20 years prior to this. And when Gary Friedrich had the idea, Marvel horror books were going strong and Satan was a character running in those books. And Friedrich's idea was to send a character named Ghost Rider after Daredevil, angry about using the name Devil to do good. So now Ann Nusenti picked up some of these threads and used them in a new way. So the Satan character had fallen by the wayside at this point, so they went back to the original Satan stand-in of Mephisto. And they didn't use his classic look. J.R. Jr. has kind of redesigned him a bit. It's more of a Dark Crystal meets Mephisto form. I like it, but it took me a while later on to realize that when I was seeing Mephisto in other comics, it was the same character I'd read in this one. Anyway, this Mephisto chose D.D. as his target partly for the same reasons that Satan would have chosen him in the original concept. You know, partly to corrupt a good man, partly to train his son Blackheart, and partly because Daredevil is a devoutly Catholic hero. But a lot of that really doesn't come into play in this particular issue. So it's a big part of the story arc before and after, but not this one issue. All we really see of that is, let's corrupt a good man. So once again, my uncanny knack for picking out of the ordinary samples of a series just steered me awry. I wouldn't read Daredevil again for years and never realized how beautifully the series so often fits into my tastes and sensibilities until that time. And in fact, it would take another 13 years for me to try it again after the disappointment my 12-year-old self felt in not having a good detective story in this issue. So then we jump ahead to my second issue of Daredevil. Now this one was cover dated March 2003, released on January 8th, 2003. This is Daredevil 41, after the renumbering and the relaunch. This was the 25-cent issue and the first chapter of Low Life, and I consider it my first proper introduction to the character, and it was the first one I read that had any crime or detective element, and this is what got me interested enough to read more Daredevil afterwards. So this first part in the Low Life arc was written by Brian Michael Bendis, with art by Alex Maleev, colors by Matt Hollingsworth, letters by Richard Starkings and Comic Craft's Wes Abbott, and the editor and editor-in-chief were Joe Quesada. The opening sequence here introduces Mila Donovan as someone that Matt saves from a runaway truck. She is a blind woman, and we get that introduced very clearly and very effectively in the first page as her friend saying, oh, watch out for the crack, and Mila responds with, don't worry, I've been at this walking thing for a while now. But reading it now, it was a nice way to meet her, but in the long run, maybe she'd have been better off if she got hit by that truck. Anyway, after Matt saves her, we get the one-page recap with the credits and everything, as they are doing now, which would have been a great asset to me when I read 278. I think it was Bill Gemmis who's credited with doing that one-page recap at the start of Marvel's issues now, beginning with the Ultimates universe, and it's a great idea. It makes it much easier to just randomly jump onto an issue of a title and follow what's going on. So at this point, we cut to Matt at work. He's in his office, and Wilbur Day is there telling him he quit. This is actually the conversation that specifically got me interested in reading more Daredevil. This is the speech, and this is the one that Wilbur Day gives Matt after handing over his Stiltman gear. All right, okay, so let me ask you. The newspaper says you're Daredevil. Do you wonder why someone hasn't killed you? I mean, who cares if the story is true or not? Just for general purposes, why hasn't someone, one of my peers, who's took us you've repeatedly spanked, why haven't one of us blown this building up? Do you know why? Because they are scared to death of you. I can admit it to you now because I'm done. I'm out. I'm sick of waking up in the middle of the night, covered in cold sweat, scared of you. You, the man without fear. I know some of them, my peers. It's hilarious to listen to them talk about you, especially lately. All they talk about is how they are laying low until the spotlight on you dies down, until they figure out what your new angle is. But really, I know they are pathologically scared to death of you. And there's only one other person that they were that scared of. Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin. But the reason I'm leaving town is that a few months ago, Vanessa Fisk, through her associates, contacted me. She was having a going-out-of-business sale and offered me a piece of the Fisk pie. A cash buy. So yeah, I came up with the bank and I get a little organized territorial kingdom to run all for myself, territory that used to be Kingpin territory. all with the guarantee that the others who buy into it will leave the other territories alone. About Intuit, we all met and agreed like men, and I sunk every dime I had into it. Let people work for me for once, right? I figure I can't be worse at it than I was at being Stiltman. Except for the fact that it ends up I was. So Vanessa sold everything she had and took off. But what no one told any of us is that there was one person she flat out denied, refused to sell to, an old buddy of yours as well, the Owl. Remember him? Remember that crazy mutant punctuation head? She told him to drop dead, took all of our money, and left. She told him to go to hell. So guess what he did to all of us the second she left town? That's right, and now I am out my money, I have a girlfriend in the hospital with a broken back, and I have a punctuation broken arm. I'm leaving. The Owl, the Kingpin, you and your stupid... You're all insane, and I am leaving. I didn't know what Bendis looked like at the time, but now that I do, I swear he was Maliv's model for that look for Wilbur Day. And also, when you're reading the issue, it doesn't actually say punctuation, they just have strings of punctuation, you know what I mean. But this issue was my first exposure to Foggy Nelson, to the Gladiator, to the Owl, to Stiltman, and to more. There's a great but short conversation that tells me everything I need to know about Matt's relationship with Foggy. The black gutters in the art so clearly define the tone and the mood of this book. The Owl, on the other hand, is crazy, sadistic, and B-list, and that comes out here, and the Kingpin is out of the picture, which surprised me, because I still remembered the Kingpin from the Spider-Man cartoon that I grew up with. So this is the issue that got me interested in more. From there, I started grabbing trades. I started with the Kevin Smith trade, because I was already a Kevin Smith fan from his movies. Then I went to Frank Miller, because I heard Frank Miller's Daredevil was the definitive Daredevil. Then I went to the trades that were in the Essentials and everything from Kevin Smith until the current Bendis run. And from there, I'm hooked. I have gone through and bought every issue of Daredevil in one form or another. Trades if they're available, single issues if they're not. I've picked up the miniseries, including Daredevil Ninja, that Bendis wrote and wasn't really happy with. I've picked up one-shots, I've picked up trade paperbacks and graphic novels. I've picked up everything I can, and this was actually the second character I did that with. The first character I did that with is a character that I really like, don't like quite as much as Daredevil, but I started getting the complete run of his titles, simply because there were fewer of them and they're generally cheaper to get my hands on. That character is Nicholas Joseph Fury, aka the original Nick Fury, as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that actually brings us to the next issue I've chosen to go through, Daredevil number 73, cover dated February 1971, released on December 8th, 1970, titled Behold the Brotherhood, written by Jerry Conway, penciled by Gene Colan, inked by Sid Shores, and lettered by Sam Rosen. So this is actually part two of three in a crossover with Iron Man. The first part is Iron Man 35, which wouldn't actually be released until December 29th, 1970, cover dated March 1971. So it was released 3 weeks after this issue, which must have been confusing for those trying to read them as they were coming out. That's where the story starts. It wraps up in Iron Man 36, released January 26th, 1971, cover dated April. Now, this is the first time we see Daredevil and Nick Fury actually interacting. So the first proper meeting between the two happens in these pages. They'd been in the same room twice before, both for weddings. So first, the wedding of Reed and Sue in Fantastic Four Annual number 3, although we never seen them interact on page. The second time they're in the same room was when Hank and Jan got married in Avengers number 60. Hank clearly got the better end of that deal in the marriage. But again, they're in the same room. We don't see any eye contact, any interaction, no discussion. There's no way of knowing if they've ever actually spoken to each other. The closest we had was an on-panel communication when Daredevil was listening to Nick Fury's general broadcast with all the other Marvel heroes in Strange Tales 156. That's the only time we can be sure that one of them has even listened to what the other one was saying. So in a very quick recap of Iron Man 35, Jasper Sitwell has been seriously injured by the Spymaster. Iron Man is ready to tear criminals apart in the police lineup. At the time, Foggy Nelson is DA and Matt Murdock is his assistant. So Daredevil is in the room as Matt Murdock. He restrains Iron Man. Says, no, you don't want to tear them apart. We need to see them go to trial. And we soon learn that it's actually Zodiac who sent out the Spymaster that injured Jasper Sitwell. And Zodiac are better known as a group of S.H.I.E.L.D. villains. Nick Fury comes in with the Zodiac key that was obtained in Avengers 72 asking Iron Man if Tony Stark can take a closer look at it, see if he could figure things out. Meanwhile, Sitwell's injury has made it into the news, so Madam Mask gets involved because, as Whitney Frost, she's in love with Sitwell. Ultimately, all of our heroes end up captured by Zodiac. Issue 73 of Daredevil starts off with a recap of issue 35 of Iron Man, but it's very Daredevil biased. So it actually recaps parts of part 1 that aren't in part 1. In part 1, we see Madam Mask and Daredevil together when they get kidnapped and caught in a net, but we don't see a lot of the events that happen afterwards that get depicted in this recap. It's much more from Daredevil's perspective. Now, the core piece of this issue is when we find out the origins of the Zodiac Key. It's a very powerful technology. It's got the ability to control people's minds. It was first introduced during the Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. series. It was a big part of the storyline in the Avengers. Its origin is ultimately told in this Daredevil issue. So all these pieces of the Marvel Universe are starting to come together right here, and it's a bit of a linchpin issue. Now, this is where incredibly powerful beings from another plane of reality have brought heroes and villains together to force them to fight against each other in the battle of good and evil to decide the fate of the universe. Yes, this issue of Daredevil was published about 10 years prior to Marvel Superhero Secret War, and it's right here. So Daredevil seems to be the one person present who's trying to fight off the effects. We see a little bit of that with Nick Fury, but we don't get the internal dialogue to say that, you know, once he starts fighting, he still resists. Daredevil still does. He's being told to fight with every fiber of his being. He fights a bit, but he's the one that backs off and says, no, I won't be your puppet. You know, we fight when we need to fight, but only when we need to fight. And his resistance is enough that this brotherhood who have the power send the guys back to New York saying, well, maybe they'll settle this fight between themselves. Meantime, we're out of it. And they stop interfering with these guys. With that, interference free starts off in issue Iron Man 36. The fight is wrapped up in the first 7 or 8 pages here, and the good guys win. But again, we see the fighting prowess of Daredevil even when he's guest starring in somebody else's book. So Daredevil and Nick Fury take out the guys that are fighting them. Madam Mask is having trouble. She's been captured. Daredevil frees her. Iron Man is fighting mad, chases his villain, but his villain causes a distraction by attacking people on the street and by actually getting Iron Man to accidentally damage one of their vehicles with his repulsors. So he goes down to save their lives that he put in jeopardy. By that time, Iron Man's villain is gone and he's away. So that part of the story is wrapped up. Iron Man continues with a trip out and ends up facing Ramrod, while Nick Fury gives Daredevil a ride back to Manhattan. So this is a nice little touch. We get more of a feeling for Daredevil being part of the larger Marvel Universe, which doesn't happen a lot. For the most part, he stands alone. You know, sometimes his stories would overlap a little bit with Ghost Rider or with other titles that were being written by the same guy as this was. All three parts are written by Jerry Conway. But this is probably the one that brings in the most players from their farthest corners of the universe by the time we're dealing with the Avengers and how they've dealt with the Zodiacs and bringing in S.H.I.E.L.D. and bringing in Iron Man. And it is also notable because for the next 20 or 30 years, when Daredevil does interact with other characters of the Marvel Universe, there are two frontrunners for the characters he's most likely to interact with. One's the Black Widow, the other is Nick Fury. And I find Daredevil and Nick Fury do make a great combination of people to work with. Very interesting stuff there, particularly the Fall of the Kingpin storyline. We've only got 5 issues to talk about here today, so I'm not going to go into those 4, but they are well worth checking out. So now the 4th issue on the list, Daredevil number 124. Cover dated August 1975, release date May 6, 1975, titled In the Coils of Copperhead. So the writer was Len Wein, who is now a regular on the Nerdist Writers Panel comic book edition, which runs on Saturdays. Check that one out, it's great. Penciled by Gene the Dean Colan, inked by Clowns Jansen, lettered by Joe Rosen, and colored by Michelle Wolfman. This issue is one I selected because it's another major milestone in terms of Daredevil character and how he interacts with the rest of the Marvel Universe. Dave has already talked about issue 81 that first brought Matt and Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow, together as a couple. Issue 174 here is the issue that breaks them up. Now, a lot of this was largely set up in issue 123 and pieces were sort of planted before then. This is the issue where it actually happens. It starts with the Black Widow leaving Daredevil out in public in front of their home. There's a crowd gathering around them. And when Daredevil realizes this, that they're out in public after Black Widow points it out, he tells them to go home and watch Kojak or something. And it's good advice, but it's 1975. Watch Columbo. That's better. Anyway, Natasha needs her own sense of identity. She needs to not be a sidekick. And that's a feeling she's had for a while, that she's a sidekick. She really enjoyed the feeling of being her own hero in her adventure that we saw in Marvel 2-in-1 where she teamed up with the Thing as his sidekick. Anyway, after that farewell, we meet Copperhead. It's a decent concept. He's a guy who just goes around killing any criminal, hunting them down, poisoning them, doesn't matter what they do. This was introduced the year after the Punisher first appeared in Spider-Man. So, guess which villain is established and still running today? Guess which one is largely forgotten. When we first meet Copperhead, he kills a purse snatcher, but just puts a police officer to sleep. We cut to a new scene where Matt and Foggy meet a computer expert who's just created a computer that generates a list of suspects for any given crime. And this expert who's put together this incredible computer somehow doesn't understand the difference between parameters, which are algebraic objects governing mathematical processes, such as the A, B, and C in the quadratic equation formula, or the M and B in a straight line, that are generally given letters from the first half of the alphabet, which is why slope is M instead of S, or perimeters, the total distance around a 2D shape. Sorry, I'm a math and physics teacher, and that really bugs me. I know it was intended, but it's a clear case of the writer and editor, who happen to be the same person this time, and or a letterer, working too far out of their comfort zone without the time or inclination, most likely time, to confirm the appropriate details. So when that doctor says perimeters, just pretend he said parameters. Anyway, so the meeting gets interrupted when a police officer comes in saying, hey, there's been a bunch of killings in the area. There's some muggers, and we need to get this taken care of. Foggy, you're the district attorney. Let's start taking action. So that's enough to give Daredevil the opportunity to use the mass murder to distract himself from his lost love. He recognizes the MO from old Copperhead pulp magazines and realizes that someone is reproducing this old character in modern times as a vigilante, but taking things much too far and much further than the pulp hero ever did. He even compares him to Doc Savage, which Marvel is about to relaunch, and there's an editorial note saying, hey, if you realize this is a plug for what we're about to relaunch, give yourself a no prize. Anyway, Matt goes to visit the original writer of the character, only to learn that the man was killed a week ago. So he continues the investigation, starts rounding up some thugs to try and get leads, and Copperhead shows up. Daredevil starts fighting him to try and protect the lives of these guys who don't deserve to die, and finds out that Copperhead appears to be either wrapped in or made of copper. So during the fight, he's knocked unconscious, and Copperhead decides that Daredevil must die. Dun dun dun! That's the end of the issue. Spoiler, Matt survives. Anyway, so Black Widow may be the first and possibly only character in comic book history who is a better, stronger person after dating Daredevil than before. So this is where she really started coming into her own as a character. Her next stop from here was to become leader of the Champions, and she was on that team along with Ghost Rider, Hercules, Iceman, and Angel. Now, since then, only Natasha and Kirsten McDuffie have been able to break up with Daredevil and come out the better for it, although Kirsten McDuffie, we didn't see a very large change in the before and after. But this was the first time that happened. Now, given Matt Murdock's dating history, the fact that she has been able to pull out of it okay and is still out there and alive and kicking and doing well is saying a lot. So if we break the decades of Daredevil into 1964 to 74, 74 to 84, and so forth, I've now discussed something from each of the first four decades. So to wrap up, the fifth and final issue I'm going to be talking about in this one is Daredevil Volume 2, number 94, cover dated April 2007, published on February 28th, 2007, titled Our Love Story. Writer was Ed Brubaker. The artists are Lee Weeks and Stefano Gaudino, or Stefano Gaudiano. The letterer is Chris Eliopoulos, colorist Matt Hollingsworth, who also colored the Lowlife issue with the owl, edited by Warren Simons. And the cover artist here is John Romita Sr. They brought him back for this one, which was just, it's a great cover and the perfect throwback and homage to the romance comics that Romita did so well in the 1950s. But one of the reasons I chose this is because it is a very unique issue in the history of the title. It seems to fit in perfectly when you're reading it, but if you go back and really look at it, it's different from a lot of titles in a lot of ways. First of all, it's done in one and was published in the 21st century by one of the big two. That's not very common, aside from some extra-sized one-shots. We don't see a lot of that anymore. Second, for all intents and purposes, Daredevil is not the hero of this story. In the real nitty-gritty of it, Mila Donovan is the hero of the story, and Daredevil is a sympathetic villain, more than the hero itself. The whole issue is an internal monologue that goes through what Mila's thinking when she lies awake at night while Matt's out there doing his thing. And she's considering her relationship with Daredevil, how broken she knows it is, and how hard it is to give that up. So in spite of that great throwback cover to the more saccharine and more upbeat 50s, the content is actually pretty bleak. This effectively describes every romantic relationship Matt has ever had, why the women keep falling for him, and why that's not a good thing for any of them. He's a very rich and interesting character, but if you have a daughter and she ever brings Matt home, get your shotgun. If you don't have a shotgun, well, that's the time to buy one. He is just not healthy to have in a relationship. As far as a detailed summary of the issue goes, we don't really need one, since this issue in itself is a summary of the 50 or so issues that came before it, and bits and pieces that are even earlier than that. It is an excellent read. It's a compelling read. The art captures the tone and the emotions that we know Mill is feeling very, very well. It's proof that you can make great comics with or without people in tights. I mean, yeah, we see Daredevil in the tights here, but they're flashbacks, they're images. The core of this story is what's going through Mila's head and her monologue, her dialogue. All you need to make great comics is to get great characters who are rich characters and multidimensional characters and put them into situations that make those characters shine. And the rest, by and large, takes care of itself. And that's something Daredevil has done throughout history. Matt himself is a very complex character. He's not the 1950s Justice League, where everybody's good at all times with no flaws, at least no recognized flaws within the world. Matt has had flaws from day one. He's had his problems. Same with his supporting cast. Foggy is great, and the relationship between Matt and Foggy is unique in comics, and it's a great dynamic to work off of, because Foggy is a very realistic character. He's got his strengths, he's got his weaknesses, he's one of the few comic book buddies that's not also a superhero. And that is the element of Daredevil that really makes the title shine to me. He is a superhero, but the super part isn't the important part. The hero part is, the depth of this character is, and the fact that you can sit there understanding why he's making his decisions, but often, at least when it comes to his personal life, knowing those decisions are the wrong one. This single issue encapsulates so much of the 50-year history in Daredevil, using a character who's only really around for 5 or 6 of them at this time. So if you want to read these issues, this final story was collected in Daredevil to Have and Have Not as a trade paperback. The other issues have all been collected in one form or another. Low Life was collected in Daredevil Low Life. The other two issues, the 3rd and 4th, so issues 124 and 73 have been collected in corresponding essentials. In the case of 73, it's been collected both in the Iron Man and the Daredevil essentials, as have the Iron Man issues. The only one that hasn't been collected was the first one, issue 278, the Ann Nocenti issue. But a lot of the Ann Nocenti run, thankfully, is available fairly cheaply in the back issue bins. They're not terribly expensive, and they are good reads. So, since Dave capped us at 5 issues, that's where I'm going to wrap up. And I'd just like to thank Dave again for inviting myself and the others to come in and do this. And I can't wait to hear what everybody else has to say. He is the one, they call a man without fear. Never far away, whenever danger's near. Daredevil fights for what is right.
You have been listening to Dave's Daredevil Podcast, which can be found at daredevilpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show via the RSS link, iTunes, and other podcatchers, or stream it on the Stitcher app, which gives you instant access to a wide range of audio programs. Email for the show can be submitted to dave@daredevilpodcast.com or through the website's handy contact form. The show is on Facebook. Simply search for Dave's Daredevil Podcast. And I am on Twitter as well. My username is @DaveWeeter. Weeter is spelled W-E-T-E-R. Daredevil and other Marvel characters are copyright Marvel Comics. Any music or sound clips are used for entertainment purposes only, and no infringement is intended. This show earns no money and exists solely for entertainment purposes only. I am J. David Weeter. Thank you so much for listening. He must hide his sadness and fight the
Elijah's king. Dream of Ghost Rider when you hear his name. Hell, devil, fight for what is right.